All right, welcome back to part two of Som and Sommer with Pendoncelli Winery. We just actually got cut off, and we're going to just kind of, as Julie said, we're going to scotch tape this and put it right back together. And what we were saying before we got cut off by some mysterious force out there, we were talking about Pendoncelli, we were talking about their Pinot Noir. And I think where we left off was me just kind of blabbing and saying it's just a great Pinot Noir, and it goes just with about any kind of food out there.
Italian hot dogs.
Fajitas. Mm-hmm. Steak, anything. It's just very versatile. So now what we're going to do is we're going to transition and we're going to go to our next wine. Mm-hmm. And this is where we were going to kind of have a little fun. Where should we go with this one, Julie? What do you think our next wine we should be poured? Which one?
Well, I really want to, if I had a vote, Mother Clones It. That would be
okay. Perfect. So I think we can go there. Let's do that.
Then we'll end with the two cabs. If you have a preference, just let me know.
Okay, so pour the Zin. So the Zin, I went on the website, and that's where it all started. It all started with Zin. So the family bought a plot of land. It was mostly Zin, and they were kind of just selling it to people that lived in their homes that were making wine. And that's where this all began.
Yes. My grandparents bought a piece of property in the middle of Prohibition, a very dry time here in the United States. But interestingly enough, you could still sell grapes to head of households who applied for a permit from the federal government. And they could make, drum roll please, 200 gallons, which is about 84 cases of wine a year. And that made a lot of happy families during that time. So,
wow.
And we're very lucky because my grandparents did not come from winemaking background. They came from towns in the far northern part of Italy. And so I think they took this time to really just kind of learn about wine. They sold the grapes, but they made their own. And then when Prohibition ended in 1933, they dusted the equipment off because they had bought a shuttered winery from another Italian family, and they started their own legacy. So 94 years later, here I am getting to talk about in a mode that my grandparents could never have imagined. But here I am talking about our Zin. Let me just give you a little nutshell about Mother Clone. Mother Clone really refers to that original vineyard that we replanted in the early 1980s, block by block, using budwood, and cloned the vineyard back into place using budwood from the original vineyard, really just to maintain the heritage. So it's a second generation vineyard. We farm a total of 33 acres on the home ranch and another 15 or so mid Dry Creek Valley that has been in the family for a long time. My cousin's vineyard, the Bushnell Vineyard. So between that, we Zinfandel is it. It's our flagship. You will find when you're trying this Zin, I love this. There's such a perfect balance between the berry and the spice that is so typical of the Dry Creek Valley dynamic when it comes to Zinfandel.
It almost comes across like a cab.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Like I wouldn't blind taste this and be like, oh, that's a Zin.
Yeah, you're right. I wouldn't. No, you're right.
I wouldn't. I mean, it still has like that tremendous full body and like that, like what you said, like, would you call it allspice or more like baking spice?
I love allspice, but I think it's just kind of warm. A little touch of cinnamon, a little touch of nutmeg, just these little touches of warm baking spices are in there.
But touches though, it's not like it's overly done. Like I've had Cabernets and Zinfandels where it is just in your face. And this is not like that. This is like very subtle and it's very, very smooth. And it's funny because you mentioned about how 1927, during this time of Prohibition, and you're basically going to people's homes and you're kind of having them create the whole winemaking experience. So you're selling grapes. What does that look like? Is it kind of like door to door? Like somebody just kind of goes to your door every day and says, hey, you know, I'm in the neighborhood. I have a bunch of grapes.
Back of my bottle.
You know, like, what do you want to do? I mean, what does that whole thing look like versus in 2021, you're trying to attract people into your winery and ship all over the world?
Well, it's interesting because there is a connection. It's word of mouth. In those early days, my grandparents, they already had kind of a network of Italians. And those are those ones who are, and anybody of European descent who didn't want to be dry during the dry time. And so they wanted to make their, and they all had the ability to make their own wine. They just needed a source, which was our grapes. And today, interestingly enough, it's word of mouth, but just in a different format via social media and other avenues. But it's just as interesting because we're not living in a dry time, but we had an interesting year, didn't we? Just through this little pandemic we have. And lots of people, more people discovered our wine because they were staying home and searching around for different things. So, you know, it is kind of interesting to go from one end of the spectrum to the other. But yeah, that's the story.
So you survive in a time during the Prohibition when a lot of wineries may have been struggling, but I've been reading more and more about, you know, particularly Napa and Sonoma in the 70s and 80s, how that was kind of like the boom time. Yeah. So was that necessarily beneficial to you? Because the funniest thing is I was talking to another store owner in the last week, and I was talking about Pedroncelli, and they were saying, Pedroncelli, yeah, that they're interesting. They're not this mass produced wine, but they're not boutique either. And we're talking saying, how exactly with your amazing portfolio do you find your kind of spot in the market, even in a great booming time for the wine industry?
Mm-hmm. Hey, it's our story. And the fact that we have stayed true to our roots, you know, we're four generations. My nephew is fourth generation working in the vineyard with his dad. And, you know, our story is one that people enjoy, and we tell our story through every glass of wine. We keep true to what we want to make, which is that, as Monse has said, varietally correct. It is Zinfandel. It may have some other aspects of other wines, but you have Zinfandel in the glass. You have Cabernet in the glass. So there, people can trust that when they try a glass of Pedroncelli wine, they're not going to be disappointed. It isn't going to taste a lot like anything else. It's going to taste like the great name that's on the bottle. And I think that is what attracts people to our wine. I mean, we're still considered a fairly small winery in a big sea. And it was interesting to see the boom. We embraced all of our neighbors. I mean, we have 60 some wineries here just in Dry Creek Valley alone, and it's the smallest of four major appellations. And, you know, so there's competition sharpens everything, sharpens your tools, sharpens your mind. Yeah, you learn and you stick with what you know, but are willing, as Monse has done, to look to new avenues of ways to express the fruit.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So you're not like with these other wineries or these other wines that are on the market, you're not looking to change your recipe just to make the masses happy. You're sticking to your game plan. What you're sticking to how you truly want the wine to be represented versus like, well, we have to adjust because the market says Americans want sugary, Americans want oaky, they want heavier wines. You're not doing that. Like we when we go to Bordeaux tastings and we talk to these winemakers, they're like, well, you know, we produce wine for our, you know, for the French people. And we'll usually say, listen, it's for the American palate, this vintage, or it's for the European palate. And I think that's what we appreciate about the wine is that you're sticking to the true meaning of what winemaking is all about, which is something that you don't see in today's market. A lot of people that come into the store that try to, you know, sell their wines to me, it's usually, well, you know, we're producing at this clip. We you know, our wines are, they're so popular. They sell so many SKUs. And this is what, you know, you could look to bring into your store. And sometimes you get to the point where you're like, listen, I want to give people quality wines. I want people to enjoy what they're putting into their body. Me and Aaron have this conversation all the time. And sometimes we both get a little frustrated with the wine scene.
Sometimes.
Today. Most of the time.
Well, no, I was saying the other day, would you go into a Whole Foods and be like, why are you selling this, this grass-fed ribeye so high? Can we negotiate a price here? You don't negotiate at Whole Foods. You go there and you be quiet about it and you just pay what they tell you to pay. And I don't understand why the wine industry is much different, especially when wine is considered by many to be food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
It's definitely true. It's crazy. It drives me up a wall because I don't get when people are saying, well, I don't want to spend that much on wine. It's like, no, but you should care about spending a little bit of money and what you're putting in your body. And that's kind of like the question I want to kind of ask you after we taste a little bit more, because there's something that's really important that, you know, you say on your website about your wines, but I'll ask you that question once we get through the Cabernets here.
Okay. Got it.
Was that our segue into the first Cabernet?
And that was my segue because I just wanted to take a sip of the Zin. Yes, let's go to the next wine. And we have we're going to go to the Cabernet first, and then we're going to go to the Wisdom next.
Yeah, that Zin just threw me off because I'm like, it's not like a normal Zin.
No, it's not.
You would think to end the night with a big Zin.
No.
But this is like a different kind of Zin altogether, and we get to the Cab.
Yes. Well, just wait until you get to the Cabernet. This is and I will add one little last thing about the Zin before we leave it, pour it out of our glasses. This does have Petit Sirah in there, and it always has. It's always been part of the makeup of our Mother Clone Zin, and that is part of the reason why I think that there's a little more structure and balance to the fruit. It's you know, Monse said a long time ago, we make spice bombs, not fruit bombs, when it comes to Zinfandel, and you definitely have that spiciness over an overripe fruit profile to it. So, all right.
Okay, so we're transitioning to the Cabernet, the Three Vineyards Cab.
Yes. Here we go. All right.
There's like a word for this Cabernet, but I mean it in like the best of intentions here.
Yes.
It's dirty. It's got like this very beneath the surface earthy quality to it that I absolutely love, that you don't see in a lot of domestic cabs these days. Like almost like gravelly kind of taste when you get beyond the fruit.
Yeah.
What's the word? Earthy?
Earthy?
I said earthy.
Dirty, earthy.
I said dirty, earthy, dirty, earthy, graphite.
Yeah. Okay. So we are tasting the Three Vineyards Cabernet. Is that correct?
Yes, we are.
All right. So because we make three Cabernets, so I've not checked before, and suddenly I'm talking about a different wine.
The finale now, is the Wisdom. So
it is. I can't wait. I love the Wisdom. All right. Here we go. Three Vineyards Cab comes from five different vineyard blocks of estate fruit. It is a Bordeaux blend, and it has that nice base of Cabernet Sauvignon. I think it's around 86%. I'm trying to remember my numbers. Then followed by Cab Franc, Merlot, a little Petit Verdot, and a very small touch of Malbec. Very small, like I think 1%. This Cabernet is truly an expression of what it is to grow Cabernet in Dry Creek Valley. We are west of Alexander Valley. We're further west from Napa. So we have a little bit more of a cooler, what I would call a cooler climate when it comes to Cabernet Sauvignon. So what you've determined is exactly it. It is earthy. And it is that beautiful little pyrazine touch that Cabernet Sauvignon is known for. It's there. Monse calls it greenier. So this is a little different. Now we're getting on kind of like dried herbs, dried sage, dried oregano, a little touch of that. That's, to me, the Cabernet Sauvignon and the Cabernet Franc coming together. But then you've got that nice softness from the Merlot, that little jab of color from the Petit Verdot, and the Malbec is just there to, you know, it's like the little finishing salt of the wine world, especially in this blend.
So can you just explain, I know a little bit about what pyrazine is, but I know that Floyd may have not heard as many times as I have. And I certainly know that our listeners may not know what pyrazine is.
Got it.
So can you just kind of clarify what that is?
It is a, you put me to the test. It is an aspect of the grape itself that expresses itself in, depending on how ripe the grape is. And I hope this becomes clear. I hope I'm explaining it correct. And you can tell me what you think.
So you could
go from one end of the spectrum to freshly sliced green pepper to the other end of the spectrum, which is freshly ground black pepper. And pyrazine can come in any, you do a 180 from the green. So if you've ever sliced a green bell pepper, you've got that smell, you know, and then you've got freshly ground pepper. It's all totally different. But they're the same. They are the same, except expressed through ripeness of the grape. Was that a good explanation of pyrazine?
To me, how you doing over there, Floyd? You got this?
No, I'm listening. No, trust me, I'm listening. I'm smelling. I'm taking it all in because the nose is just, it's exactly what you're saying. It's like that green, if I slice the green pepper right here, it's what I'm getting there. And it's like, it's true. Touch. It's like, oh, just a touch. And it's like, okay, black pepper. It's just so many different
layers.
Noses that you're getting, layers that I'm getting. That's why I was just listening as you were talking. I'm just like, wow, I'm getting this.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm getting this.
So pyrazine is just, it's not found. It's found in actually Cabernet Sauvignon and Sauvignon Blanc. So Sauvignon Blanc that's not as ripe will present more of that pepper, that the green pepper, rather than the riper pepper, I guess, if you can pick it between the two. And I learned something the other day. Did you know that Cabernet Sauvignon is the child of Sauvignon Blanc and Cabernet Franc?
I did know that.
I found that. I was like, oh, I learned. I love to learn little things like that. And then you think, okay, now I've tried Cabernet Franc and I've tried Sauvignon Blanc, and then they were the parents of Cabernet Sauvignon when they blended them together.
Yeah, it's so true. It's like, you know, I've always said that's the one thing I love about wine. It's like you, every time you try something, you always learn something new. It's something that you can't say you know everything there is to know about it, because it's always constantly evolving, constantly changing. It's like reading all these articles about how the wine game has changed, talking to all these people that make wine. Mm-hmm. It's so much fun to learn. Like,
yes,
yeah, this is how we make our wine. This is what it tastes like. And then and the way you make Cabernet Sauv could be different than somebody else makes it, and could be from the same part. Yeah. And you could be like neighbors and it comes out different. So it's so amazing to me. And that's what I think I love about the whole, I call it the wine game. I love it because I'm just constantly being told something new and I'm learning. And I just appreciate like wine for that matter. It's just really a lot of fun.
It's an adventure.
I thought I knew my stuff with wine, and I thought that Petroncelli was in Napa. And today I learned it's in Sonoma. So you're learning something new every day about wine.
Because you think you're a smarty pants. That's your problem. You think you know it all.
No, I think.